The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Hi, I'm Nora. Welcome to my podcast, Behind the Moves, The Life of a Dancer. In this series, I will be talking about firsthand experiences, my experiences being a competitive hula and Tahitian dancer, all the way from training, competition life, and dancing at such a young age.
Do it for fun, don't take it personally.
Hi guys, welcome to episode 7, Kumu's Daughter. So in this episode, I'm going to be interviewing...
Hi everyone, I'm Jazzy. I'm Leona's teacher. I've been training her for a couple of years. I'm 21 years old and currently I'm working and pursuing dance.
So she's also my first ever dance teacher's daughter. And then she started teaching... How old were you when you started teaching?
I think I started teaching with my mom, like just teacher's aid, like starting at 13 years old. And then I became like my own teacher and had my own class starting at 16.
So we already know how you started dancing as you're the Kumu's daughter. I'm going to ask, how did you feel about dance when you were younger? Did you like it or did you dread it?
I don't think I ever dreaded dancing. I think I was always around it. And so I was just used to it. But we always had classes going on in our house before we had a studio. So every day there was people dancing like in our backyard. And so I was really used to it. I never had negative emotions about it. But I think I've always just loved dancing anyway.
How did you feel about being the teacher's daughter? Did you feel any pressure?
Yes, I definitely felt a lot of pressure, and I don't usually talk about it just because I think I also have a lot to think about that pressure, and I think it helped me become a more hardworking person and just wanted to push myself to be a role model. But there's definitely pressures that I'm realizing now that I'm older that I feel like weren't always fair. Like starting at 13, you're kind of pushed to be the center of attention almost. So like when I walked through studio doors, it's like I knew everyone was watching me and I knew everyone had this expectation of me. And then when we're outside of studio doors and we're home, then it was a conversation between me and my mom of like, you're my daughter, you need to set the example. You should be in front. And if you're not good enough, then you're gonna be in the back and you shouldn't be in the back. And so there was always a pressure of like needing to be the example, which is a lot when you're young, but I think I'm really grateful for all the things that it taught me now.
Do you remember how you started competing and did you like it growing up?
I started competing by doing what most of the babies do now is like the exhibition line. So when you're like between three and five, I think, you just go up and dance with all the other babies for fun. And I did that for a couple of years, and I actually don't remember exactly when I started transitioning into actual competing and not doing like the exhibition, but I liked it. I think because I always knew when I started dancing that there was like something to look forward to and like you're dancing to train for this. I don't think I've ever disliked it, and I've just known that it's part of the game, and yeah, I've always liked it. It's fun, and seeing everyone else from other halals is really fun. You start to make good friends and you get excited to just see everyone. It's like a family reunion.
So what is your thought process backstage before you go on at competition, and do you even think about anything when you're actually on stage?
Backstage, I feel like I'm mostly on autopilot, and especially when you're backstage and you can hear the drums, I think it kind of takes you out of your head. And so I feel like I'm not necessarily thinking anything specific, and if I am thinking something, it's more so along the lines of like, oh, I really like this beat, or maybe I could do this to this beat, and I'm probably dancing more than I am thinking. Being on stage, I think it's the same thing but amplified, so I'm like 100% on autopilot, and I'll try to get into the habit of being aware when I'm on stage, and while I'm dancing, trying to be aware and conscious about what I look like and like, am I smiling or am I doing this move too much or am I facing the back too much? So I feel like it's on super autopilot, but I'm also working on training myself to hit those questions while on autopilot, like have that be part of the program of my brain on autopilot, if that makes sense.
So I remember you bringing up not training so much backstage at this one competition. Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, at the competition in SoCal, I had a lot of pressure. I was really nervous just because it was my first time competing in SoCal. And I realized backstage everyone was training really hard and pushing their drills, pushing their limits. And I would look around and I would get nervous and I would be like, oh, wow. They are all super good. They're all really strong and they're training super hard. They're probably going to beat me. I'm probably going to not make it through this round. And so to ease my mind from that, I kind of just turned away and went into my own world of just dancing. And I tried to just remind myself why I'm there and what I love about dancing. And I just kept dancing to the music. I was just like rounds and rounds of freestyling and having fun and just seeing what I can do with the beats. They were really new beats, like not beats that I'm used to dancing to, but that's what made it fun. And I was just having a really good time just freestyling and experimenting with my movement, and I ended up doing really well at that competition. So I think that's a good tactic, is to not think so hard, because I think when you're training and practicing backstage, you get into like an overthinking mode, and I just wanted to avoid that.
Okay, so I constantly compare myself to other dancers, especially backstage before a competition. And from a teacher's perspective especially, can you give me some advice to me and others out there who are going through the same thing?
I think that comparison is a tool, and so it can be used for better or for worse. I think that at first, comparison can make you feel bad about yourself, and it's completely human and natural to have those thoughts and look at other people and think, oh, I'm not as good as them, or how do I look like them when I dance? And of course, initially, it'll make you feel bad and that you're not good enough. But when you transition to using comparison as a tool, you can really just use it for motivation. And I think I'm not exactly sure how I developed a mindset like this, but I've always seen people better than me as like motivation. And it's always my thought process when I see those people is always like, okay, I see you. I see that you can do that. Let me see what I could pull out of my pocket now. And it just kind of helps there's nothing wrong with a little bit of competition, especially in things like sports and art, like dancing. The competition, I think, is how you really level up and bring yourself to a new level. So I think it's a great tool if you know how to use it.
So how did you start dancing hip hop? And do you think that hip hop made you grow as a Tahitian dancer?
I got into hip hop through YouTube, actually. I got really into watching videos by like Matt Stefanina and Wildebeest, JoJo. They're all like industry hip-hop choreographers, and I would watch them pretty religiously. I think every day after school it was like my favorite activity to do, and my second favorite thing to do right after that was show my mom all the videos I just watched, and we would talk about it, and she would ask me like, oh, do you want to take classes and maybe we can find a studio for you? And I think for like 4 years everything was so expensive and we couldn't really afford for me to take actual like lessons. So I would learn in my room and kind of freestyle. So I was self-taught for a long time. And then a hip hop studio ended up renting out from our Polynesian studio. And that's how I actually started dancing hip hop. I think hip hop and Tahitian, they both helped each other out. When I started dancing hip hop, I think it taught me a lot about pushing the artistry differently when I started doing Tahitian after doing hip hop. It really helped me think about like what else can I do, and pushing it more into a like contemporary style, I guess, or it just really made me think about how can I bring my Tahitian dancing to another level. Like, what can I try that I haven't done before? And it also taught me a lot of different teaching styles. Just because I think Tahitian is a cultural dance, so they don't really have like 5, 6, 7, 8 breakdowns. They just have a lot of like, copy me and this is how it's done. And it's a dance that comes from a rich culture and history, so there's no breaking down the way it would be broken down in like ballet. So I learned that you could still break down Tahitian, and I learned how to do that for my students. And so yeah, that's how hip hop would have helped Tahitian. With Tahitian, I think that SoCal pushes the boundaries traditions a little bit more than we do in the Bay Area. I think now in the Bay Area, we are starting to kind of take a contemporary route and push the limits of what our dance could look like. But I think a lot of it is rooted from SoCal, and like inspiration we get for that is coming from SoCal. And so they're a lot more experimental with what dance can look like. And I think it started in SoCal of dancers like making Tahitian dances to American songs. I think that's where that came from. So they definitely are like pushing the limits more than we are here in the Bay Area. But in the Bay, we're very traditional. We follow a lot of the traditions in terms of like, you can only dance with one halal. And in SoCal, you can see that like they kind of share dancers for different projects. And I think that's kind of cool. That's actually how it is in hip hop. So you don't really have like the strict rules of like, if you're with this halal, you can only be with this halal, and you need blessing to do this and this and this and this. It's really different. And with hip hop, the auditions are a lot more intense. There's larger quantity of auditions in SoCal, and just the opportunity is larger there.
How did you become a dance teacher, and how did you feel transitioning from being a student to a dance teacher?
I became a dance teacher. I feel like for most of my life, I was shadowing my mom just to learn how to become a teacher. Not being able to dance was so hard for me, but it also opened up other opportunities like fully being a teacher. And that's kind of like how I kind of got forced into being a teacher. But it was really nice. I really love being a teacher. So when I have a student come to me and say, you know, I really need to fix this, and I want to fix like the way I dance or my performance or this certain step. And when we start to see those changes and like the hard work is paying off, and I could tell that my student is satisfied and proud of themselves, that's my favorite part about being a teacher. And I feel like it's a great opportunity for me to learn and for me to learn from my students. The transition between being a student and a teacher, I think, is something I'm still dealing with. It's hard, especially I think my mom doesn't really know the difference of like, she wants me to still perform and she still wants me to do this and this, this and this. But I'm like, oh, I haven't learned any of that because I've been teaching. And so it's hard to balance when I can be a teacher and when I could be a student. So I'm still figuring it out, finding my balance between that.
Okay, that's it for this episode. Thank you for being on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.